In a world in which we too often look out for ourselves at the expense of others, God calls us to be different. Philippians 2 says, "Let nothing be done through strife and vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, helping you lovingly put God's principles into action in your daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. This is God's word to us. He loves us, He understands us, and He promises that underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, asking a question today: what's happening to feminism? Well, things are happening. Changes are occurring. The fruits of feminism are beginning to wake some folks up. Here's a letter from a woman who tells me that she is an ex-feminist. "I've been a believer in Jesus Christ since I started Sunday school as a toddler. As a young teenager, I made a commitment to Christ, and then a few years later began to drift away. We were having problems at home due to the sudden and unexpected death of my father. Then I attended one of those high-powered East Coast women's colleges where I was surrounded by feminists. Although I never became a radical feminist myself, I did pick up some dangerous ideas and incorporated them for myself. I married right after college and eventually had three children. When my husband was in graduate school, I also took classes and earned an MA in Latin, planning to teach as soon as my second child started school. I had a third baby instead. When he was almost four, I did start working 3 days a week in a school library. I saw nothing wrong with this, just as I saw nothing wrong with lots of other things, like daycare, hyphenated last names, etc. During all these years, my husband, children, and I had faithfully attended church. Then my husband began attending a men's prayer breakfast, where there was lots of serious prayer and study, and he became a man made new. Then ensued a difficult period during which he was struggling to live a life in greater obedience to God, and I was resisting, giving up the comfortable status quo. I saw no reason why I should quit my job or accept that our decision to have three children was arbitrary and we should leave the family planning to God, or that, unthinkable, I should submit to my husband. My husband kept bringing me books to read, and I kept refusing. One day, he brought me Let Me Be a Woman. That happens to be a book that I wrote. She says, "I refused it, but every time he wasn't looking, I found myself picking it up and reading it. It was clearly the work of a woman who was intelligent, thoughtful, and living a Christian life. I finally told him grudgingly that book by Elizabeth Elliott was sort of okay. To make a long story short, we left the church we had been attending, a very liberal one, and have joined a Bible-believing, Spirit-filled church. This has been an invaluable source of help. I am a happy, full-time mother to our four children. Our baby is 4 months old, and I feel that God continues to give us help and grace as we try to live more obediently." That's just one of a number of letters that I have had from women who tell me that they are ex-feminists. Of course, feminism is a very broadly defined philosophy, but basically, I think it is an attempt to prove that men and women are essentially equal and interchangeable, whereas it seems to me that God made men and women gloriously different and gloriously unequal. We're meant to be complementary, not competitive or interchangeable. Well, we can't go into all of that, but I think the secular world is realizing that there have been some fallacies in that kind of philosophy. And I was fascinated to read of a high school girl in Canada who had won a speech contest. She spoke out loud and clear against things like multiculturalism, equity programs, free housing, and feminism. She said, "I would never take a scholarship or a job by quota because I realized that if you really want to succeed, you have to work for it. There's a lot of feeling out there that people are getting handouts. She delivered, as this article reports, a broadside that so distressed some teachers, they lobbied to exclude her from the next day's provincial speaking finals. Their bid to shut her up failed, and she won the championship. Opposition was confined to representatives from the Vancouver area. Students told me they found it offensive and racist, said one teacher. During a meeting the next day, she and several others advocated disqualifying Miss Duval. The girl's name was Eden Duval. But others argued it was silly to deny someone freedom of speech at a speaking contest, and eventually a compromise was struck in which the Burnaby Central student James Richardson was given an opportunity to rebut the speech, a move unheard of in the 15 years Mr. Munson has been involved in the Debate and Speech Association of British Columbia. If the aim was to inhibit Miss Duval's style, and some students certainly said they thought it was, it backfired rather badly. The following day, the 17-year-old said it proved exactly what she was alleging, that rules are often arbitrarily changed nowadays to accommodate minorities, and that people who oppose the process can expect to be attacked. She said, a Chinese guy came up to me after the semifinals and said, don't let anyone tell you you're a racist. I agree with everything you said. Among the other things that she said, it's much easier for a woman to become a principal. It's easier for a Native Indian to become a cop because of employment equity programs. They merely set up another imbalance so that all you're doing is disadvantaging another group. And here in the States, we have heard plenty of complaints from men who have been denied jobs because they didn't belong to the right sex. Another interesting view from a Canadian by the name of Fred Byfield. There came from Canada's Justice Minister, Kim Campbell, last week, an astonishingly frank disclosure. She had tried hard, she said, to find a suitable woman to fill the vacant position on the Supreme Court of Canada. Unable to do so, she had, out of necessity and with due apology, appointed a man, Mr. Justice Jack Major of the Alberta Court of Appeal. What was most instructive, however, is why she couldn't find a woman. Now listen to this. Several women had been approached, said the Justice Minister, but none would accept. They didn't want to move to Ottawa. Their husbands' jobs were in the West, and they didn't want to leave them. Or they had children and could not raise them properly, considering the time and stress entailed in the Supreme Court. So they turned down the most prestigious legal job in the country and put their families first. Doesn't that make you want to cheer? This tendency of women to subvert their careers to their families prevents many women from taking senior positions at Ottawa, says Mrs. Campbell. Not just those on the bench, but in government too. So Mr. Byfield asks this question, what sort of woman does take the big jobs at Ottawa? From the minister's disclosure, we are driven to conclude it must be the woman who puts her family obligations second, or more probably doesn't have any family obligations. She has preferred a career to raising kids. Consider then what this means. In the main, women who go down to Ottawa, who get the big jobs through affirmative action hiring policies, who sit on our courts and shape our laws, exert enormous influence on family and criminal law, and who develop indoctrinational courses for our judges, these are mostly women who have rejected having children in favor of having a career. It is they who will provide what is called the woman's view. Yet it is also they who have deliberately rejected the view of most women. One asks, can they remain objective? And would careerist women not have a tendency to belittle or possibly resent those who had gone the other way? Would they see these family-first women as the mere sycophants of a dying establishment, servants of the old oppressive patristic order? In other words, is there a notable conflict of interest here? In dissociating themselves from what most women do, have these women perhaps disqualified themselves from acting on behalf of most women? Are the only women who are available to do such jobs the very women who ought not to be doing them? Perhaps a feminist could see the point better if she were to examine the case she herself makes against the celibate clergy of the Roman Catholic Church. Why, she asks, should a bunch of unmarried old bachelors make all the decisions for women and for, quote, normal, unquote, people who marry and have children? In the same vein, then, why should a bunch of unmarried and, alas, increasingly old women set public policy for men and for normal people who marry and have children? Mrs. Camel takes a defeative view on this. I think we're going to have this problem for a long time, she says. That is, she foresees that this regrettable female habit of putting their children ahead of their careers is likely to continue, women being what they are. Well, I thank God that some chinks of light are beginning to be shown in the feminist doctrine. Thank God for women who want to be women and are glad when men are men. God made us different for very good reasons. Let's be as feminine as we can as women, and you men, we need you to be as masculine as you can. Not macho, not beating us over the head with a club, of course. You know that's not what we're talking about. But we're made to be different, made to be complementary. And the more feminine the women are, the more masculine the men will be. And the more masculine the men are, in the true sense, in the God-designed and God-ordained sense, the more we women will be women.
Growing up, Elizabeth Elliot understood that studying the Bible is a vital priority for the Christian life. And ladies, we can also establish a solid foundation for our lives through daily Bible reading and prayer. Join us next time as we think about the eternal truth of God's Word here on Gateway to Joy. Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your Gateway to Joy. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.